Hey everybody, on this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, we're getting up close with actress Caitlin O'Connor. Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Look at that. Welcome everybody to AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. This is the show where we get up close and personal with the people both in front and behind the camera who bring you all the great entertainment that you get to watch at the theaters, at your own home, maybe on your mobile streaming devices. I'm your host, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. My guest today, though, is an actress and also a social influencer who got her start performing when she was 3 years old. At 3 years old, I think I was barely learning to walk properly. Since then, she's a singer, she's a social influencer, she's an actress. Her latest project is going to be American Satan. She's also got another film we'll be talking about as well called Glass Jaw, still in active production. I'm excited to hear about that as well. So ladies and gentlemen, a big round of applause for Caitlin O'Connor.
What's up?
Oh,
hi.
Look at that. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, the pleasure's all mine. So I was reading, so you started performing when you were 3 years old.
I loved going to dancing school. I just loved it. It was just my favorite thing.
And what was it? Is it just the idea of just like the being in an ensemble, or was it just like just the idea of like the moves and stuff that's what captivated you?
The movement and the freedom of ballet class and jazz class. And I grew up dancing, and my father was in entertainment, and so was my mother. My mom was a model, so it kind of just happened naturally.
Wow. Now, you grew up in Pennsylvania. Is it close to Allentown?
Uniontown.
Uniontown, excuse me.
Uniontown, yep.
So now, as parents that are in the industry, by the time they came to Pennsylvania, they kind of stepped away, or were they still actively involved when you were growing up?
My parents got divorced when I was five, so I was born in Los Angeles, and I moved to Uniontown, and I grew up in my grandparents' house.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you're growing up and you start getting involved in dancing, how did the rest of the family feel like, uh-oh, she's starting to get interested in the arts?
They actually kind of forbid me to want to do feature films and TV.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They wanted me to be studious. My mom said she wanted me to be a medical researcher, which that would have never happened. It wasn't happening.
Did you have any, was it just because you just didn't have any interest in it? Or you're like, nah, I'm good at it, but that's not something I'm really passionate about.
I was an English major at UCLA, so I always loved writing. I loved reading great books, but it wasn't, I just always wanted to be in entertainment. Couldn't get me away from it.
So when you finally, as much as your family steering you away towards like, no, do something else, get another, like a stable career. And when did they realize like, there's no hope? We just have to let her do it. This is what she really wants to do.
I was 21 and my grandmother said, you know, Caitlin, I am so happy that you're chasing your dreams.
What more can you ask for from a family member?
You can't. That was the best.
That is amazing. So now we talked a little bit before the show started. Your grandmother seems like very interesting. As supportive as she was about you chasing your dreams, very adamant about you not being involved in the kitchen.
She was such a character. I was not allowed to do anything but study growing up. Like nothing. No sports. I snuck and I was a cheerleader and she let me do that. Finally.
And what was it about sports? She thinks that it's too much of a distraction.
I was going to hurt my face. I was going to burn myself near the stove. I was going to get my nose broken in softball. I was going to break my leg in dance class. It was so much worry. And guess what? Now I'm a worry wart.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so any of your friends or loved ones, are you constantly worried for them or only worried about yourself?
I'm the mom. I'm texting people. Are you drunk? Do you need a ride home? I'll take you home. 2 a.m. I'll take you home. Call me. Call me.
That's not a bad thing to have that kind of friend in your corner, though, at all.
I want a friend like that. Somebody drive me home at 2 a.m.
Yes. Caitlin, you doing okay? All right. I'll do
Frank,
it, Caitlin. Yes.
It's you.
That's it. I'm going to be calling you, texting you at 2 a.m. Caitlin, are you all right? Do you need a ride? I'm
all
here.
Right. You'll be getting me Ubers at 3:30.
All right. That's fantastic. I've never actually gotten an Uber for another person. Is that easy to do?
It's pretty easy. You just type in the PIN, except if the person you're calling the Uber for says their real name when they get into the Uber and not your name, that might be a problem.
Ah, that's the hook. Okay, gotcha. All right. Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. So you said, because they're not checking ID or anything in an Uber. You're just hopping in and you're going.
They should.
Yeah, that's true. Now, one of the projects that I want to talk about is that you were in a mockumentary with Jeff Goldblum. Could he do?
I was not. That's another Caitlin O'Connor. This is a really interesting thing because there's another Caitlin O'Connor from my hometown who is an actress. And sometimes our IMDb's get mixed up.
Get out of town.
I think she's posing as me. You guys,
what?
You have to throw like Throw eggs
what
at her house.
What is going on?
Go toilet. Don't TP her house. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
So then, when you're in Pennsylvania, when did you decide you wanted to move to UCLA? Go out and head out to UCLA.
I was 16, and I was graduating high school early, and I just randomly applied to UCLA online as an out of stater, and they randomly accepted me. I think it was just such a blessing.
Now, as somebody that wanted to pursue the entertainment, what made you decide L.A. over, as opposed to maybe going to New York, which is much closer?
I wanted to get to know my dad. You know, my parents had such a bad divorce when I was five or six, and we just had such a strained relationship. I decided when I was leaving high school that I really wanted to have a relationship with him, and that was so important to me. So I tried to find a school that was near him and where he was working before he retired, and that was just such a good time for me to get to know him.
Now, and what has your father done out here in the entertainment?
He works in the transportation department for Warner Brothers and all sorts of studios. And
awesome.
Yeah, he loved his job. He's retired now. He lives in Reno and watches TV all day.
when I'm not doing other stuff, one of the jobs that I do is over at Universal Studios.
Nice.
For some of the tours and stuff over there. And so get to know a lot of the people that work in the transportation department, drive our trolleys, the trams, vans and vehicles. And the stories that they have to share about everything that they've driven for in various sets and productions, just amazing the stories they have to tell.
Oh, it's crazy. Well, my cousin C. Thomas Howell is an actor, so he has some pretty crazy stories from starring The Outsiders and all sorts of movies. But my dad has all of the behind-the-scenes stories that nobody knows.
Those are the best stories to have.
And I have he should make me sign a non-disclosure, because I have so many things on so many people that I can never say. I'll tell you later.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Because there's a gentleman that we're incredibly fond of, but he's getting ready to retire in July, and I keep telling him, it's the time to write your book. Write your book, because you've got a bazillion stories to share. It's like, and I feel like those are the stories that, like, once they retire and they just move on, like, those are the stories that are kind of just, like, lost.
Mm-hmm.
You just, like, you never get to hear those, like, really cool little insider things.
Yeah. That should be, like, a pay site.
Yeah, that's
pay for play website. What really goes on in Hollywood?
So when you move out, do you live with your dad, or are you attending UCLA and living right there?
This is a funny story. I lived with my dad for maybe 3 weeks before he was like, you've got to go.
What?
I was coming home at 4 a.m. I was in a sorority at UCLA. So I moved into the sorority house at the Pi Phi house.
Oh, man.
And then I got my own apartment. I just could not find a nice place to stay when I moved to L.A. I was just all wild.
Well, I can imagine. It's that sense of freedom. You're finally...
Finally free.
Yes.
I could use a stove.
Yep.
I could play softball.
What, was it a little bit like that, kind of going to the extreme of like, I don't have anybody watching me. I can kind of just do what I want.
It was. I'm glad that I never got into like hard drugs or anything. You know, it's so easy when you move to a big city and people like peer pressure you into doing things. And I just wanted to stay out late or watch TV till 4 a.m. I was pretty boring. It was pretty boring.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, that's a cool way of going about it. I mean, I feel
I
like that was
a cool
my
way. I survived.
Yes. My college experience was more just like nerding out on late hours, not going out and doing tons of partying or anything. But rushing a sorority, did you enjoy that whole experience of rushing and being a part of a sorority?
Oh, I was such a nerd in high school. I was really nervous to rush a sorority. I got into Pi Phi somehow. I don't know why they picked me, but I had so many good girlfriends from there. I still talk to them today.
Because I always felt like, and I don't know if you felt like this too, when you ready to go, if you at the end just rushing a fraternity or sorority, the only thing that you may have context for is what you see in TV shows or films. Like, this is what it's going to be like. Is it going to be...
Yes. I thought I was going to be hazed. I was going to, like, somebody's going to flush the toilet down with my head in it. I don't know.
They're going to make me eat food. Yeah. Are they going to draw on markers on you? And like, ugh, gross. All right. Nice.
I was always scared to, like, wake up and if I had makeup drawn on me, like, loser on my forehead. That never happened to me. It never happened.
So did you go to UCLA with the intent of majoring in acting at that point?
They had a separate school for theater, and I didn't apply. I thought English was a good middle ground for both. And there are so many actors who majored in English, and they are able to write scripts and produce films, and I think it opens up. You know, I just use it to write good emails. I'm just really good at, you know, grammatical correctness on emails. That's what I use my English degree for. Cheers.
just cranking out those quality emails. Mm-hmm. But that's always, I mean, right now communication is done so much through emails right now, as opposed to letters or conversations.
So. Or being creative with 140 characters. I can do so much better than some people who tweet at 3:30 a.m. I need to do some editing. I can do Twitter editing now with my English degree.
Oh, see, look at that. Yeah, well, especially if the mother of all your friends, like before you send anything out,
I do this.
Let me check your tweets. Let me check your emails.
I will send my girlfriends a little text. Hey, you spelled that word wrong on your Instagram story. People hate me for this. They hate me. They get just so annoyed.
But no, I mean, if that's what you want, you don't want to see something out there that's misspelled.
I think
stuff.
People should know the difference between then and then.
Ah, or your and your with the apostrophe?
With the apostrophe, yes. R-E. These are important things.
Yes. So then while you're pursuing your degree in English, are you also picking up auditioning for roles and stuff out here as well? Student films, things like that?
I was afraid to start in the industry. I didn't know where to start. And somebody at UCLA approached me about being their catalog model. And I thought that was like a sign that I should really start. I was just very studious as I used to be. And so I modeled for that catalog, and that was my first shoot ever. And it went really well.
What's it like just going and you just living your day-to-day life, and then somebody just walks up to you and says, hey, you know what? You should be a model. Is that just like what?
I was like, me? Really? So then I kind of got a little confidence going.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
So did you do primarily just more modeling while you were UCLA?
At UCLA, it's much easier, you know, being on set, you can't go to class, but doing a photo shoot, you can kind of do it on weekends or at night or early in the morning before class. So I was able to get a lot of modeling done in college.
How is it though, when you're pursuing something that you kind of have an interest towards and you're gravitating, but you're also trying to get a degree? You're burning the candles at both ends at that point.
It's really difficult. And going to school at UCLA, especially as an out-of-state student, the first 2 years was very expensive.
I bet.
I have lots of student loans. If anybody out there wants to help me with my student loans, is the time.
Caitlin's got a GoFundMe right now.
I don't, but you can make one for me. We'll split half of the funds.
Sounds like a good deal. So is that a deal if you're coming from out of state it's 2 years before you can get residency?
For me, it was.
Okay.
It's different. It's very situational, but for me, it was tough.
So now with your dad being here, was he very, I want to say like a helicopter dad, was he very much like, what's going on? What are you doing? Or was he like, you know what? I'm just going to give you your space and let you do your own thing.
The first couple weeks of me getting to know him, he really wanted to parent me, but I was adamant in the fact that I was 17 years old and I was an adult, even though I wasn't. So he was, he gave me my space after that.
I have to mention that's challenging on both sides for somebody that you didn't have a really close relationship until much later in your life. How do you reestablish that? Because you're not used to that person being a parental figure in your life.
Yeah, I guess that I had some resentment issues that we really had to work through at the beginning of it. And it's so important to do that, or you carry those issues throughout your whole life and you're not really attacking them and getting through them. So we did it.
Because it's also to think that it's sometimes hard as a child to realize that, you know, your parents live their own, have their lives of their own, and they also have their issues as well. And, you know, there are reasons things happen that you may not be consciously aware of.
Yes. You can't blame your parents for anything, because you will, to be that age and have a kid, and you will make a mistake or, you know, just some things you can't change. It's important to forgive people.
But it's nice to see that your relationship's, he's in Reno right now. Yeah. I guess still hang
out. What's in Reno, you guys? Can anybody tell me what's in Reno?
I mean, I guess a little bit of gambling. I guess anywhere in Vegas, anywhere in Nevada, you get some gambling.
Octogenarian gambling?
I guess. You mean you've never gone out to visit him in Reno?
No, I have been to Reno, and I still can't figure out what people do there. I can't.
Because I've never actually, I mean, I've been to Vegas and up there, but I've never actually gone to Reno. I just imagine, is it like Vegas on a much smaller kind of?
It's the biggest little city in the world.
Oh, all right. So you graduate, and at that point now, you've been doing some modeling. You feeling comfortable? Do you feel like, all right, I'm ready to start pursuing some acting roles?
Yes. I got an agent, and I started in. I did. I've done all sorts of little things. Dave and Buster's commercial, hosting for Maxim.
Now I understand, because you're also doing like some advice for them as well.
Yes, I was in their hometown Hotties a while back before they switched over new owners, and I was their advice girl.
So what's it? No, I'm curious about like getting advice. So now they're just, are they coming to you with, here's a few letters, emails, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What is your honest feedback on this? Or are they kind of like, we're going to write these answers out for you, give them to you, just say them.
They sent me the best questions that they found, you know, the top 10 questions, and I would answer them. So if a Maxim reader wrote in and said, should I buy this red convertible or I'm looking at this other car, I would just tell them like it is. I don't think you should be driving a red convertible. It's too showy. Unless you want to buy it for me, I'll drive it.
So what is it like being put in a situation where like, all right, people want my opinion. They want my advice. Did you feel comfortable giving it or you were like,
I love giving
my
advice. It's back to that mom thing okay. that I do with everybody. People walk up to me and I was hosting a video game convention 2 weeks ago in Poland. And one of my coworkers, I was mid-sentence on the mic and he's like, I'm going through this breakup, man. I need your help, Caitlin. Will you tell me what to do? I'm like, but I'm working right now. So I love giving advice. It's, you know. Even when people don't ask me for it.
Well, there you go. You're just doing your best to help out.
I'm doing my best.
Yes,
I will help you.
So now you mentioned hosting over there. So doing hosting as well. Depending. Yes. Now, hosting is for somebody, I guess, likes being a mother and stuff like that. But you get to be like the best version of yourself. You don't have to worry about assuming another character. It's just you kind of amplified a little bit.
It's just me all ad-libbing, no script. I can read a teleprompter. Very well. But yeah, hosting for Maxim is awesome. And interviewing all these celebrities on the red carpet, I never thought I would meet Ludacris. I almost peed my pants at Super Bowl in Houston. He's walking up and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't do it. But I did it. I did it. And it was awesome. Yeah, just interviewing my favorite celebs has been such a dream come true. Like DJ Khaled.
Oh, wow.
He got the key.
Man.
He gave me the key.
No.
No, he didn't have the key in his hand.
So what's it like interviewing celebrities for the first time? You're thrust in a situation. You're going to be interviewing them. Did you take a little while to get your sea legs on how to handle that? Were you kind of fanning out at some point? So like, I got to dial that back. I just got to do my thing.
I had to dial out my fangirling moments. But I gave my cell phone to my cameraman, and he was taking behind the scenes so I could tweet it all. I tweeted everything.
Yes. I mean, that's a perfect thing if you have somebody there actually that can do those photos for you. You don't worry about asking, do you mind if we interrupt? Can I just get a quick
never
selfie?
Never interrupt the interview for a selfie with your favorite celeb. Even though you want to. It's never a good idea.
I can imagine.
They might walk away.
Now, do you feel like the struggle, like, all right, they're coming down this red carpet. They've been asked the same questions a bazillion times. Now, what can I say to them that's going to be something fun, something different, that's not going to make them feel like, oh my gosh, this is the 18th time I've answered this question?
I try to make my interviews fun. I really do. I was interviewing Tiesto for Indy 500, and he was hosting the Maxim event and performing. And I just said, do you have a competitive spirit? And I asked him if he likes to mud wrestle and who he would mud wrestle with. I don't know. I don't know why I ask people the weirdest questions, but it's better than asking them, you know, about their new single, because they've done it 100 times.
Yeah. So did he want to mud wrestle?
I forget who he said he wanted to mud wrestle, but I think he might have said it was me that he wanted to mud wrestle.
Oh, well, but Caitlin, there you go.
I would have won.
I don't want to brag or anything. Caitlin's got some guns.
Yeah,
there you go. The top's a little flowy, but trust me, there are guns underneath there.
Don't trust these flowers.
So then you've also been doing social influencing as well. So what is it like being also somebody that is considered a social influencer?
This term influencer is so new and I don't know how to handle it. I definitely don't like advertise myself as an influencer, but I'm known as an influencer. I don't identify. I identify as an actress, but I got a lot of followers somehow by posting sexy pictures. I guess I should throw that out there in case you want to follow me.
So the idea is that I guess you're saying the sexy pictures come first, then people saying like, oh, wait, she's getting a lot of followers. Perhaps she could do stuff for us as well. And then they start approaching you that way.
Yeah, I guess that's how it happened for me, just posting photos from my photo shoots and from my interviews and just getting an interest with people out there. And it's having followers nowadays on your social media platforms is so integral to anybody's career. Whether you're a host, whether you're a chef, whether you own a restaurant, you have to have followers and a social media presence. And it's a double-edged sword because you can be such a talented actor and a talented host, but if, you know, a company only wants you for your followers, it's What do you do?
I find that it is frustrating just in many of it, like whether it be hosting or acting and stuff, where people will more often look at like, what are your social influence? What are your media numbers here? Twitter, yeah. Instagram, rather than looking at what your talent level is.
Right. And so you have to have both nowadays.
Which, boy, and it's interesting how many actors will come in here and I've interviewed and their agent or their, yeah, their, one of the agents will be there and it's like, you know, you need to be on Twitter more. You need to be Instagramming more. And so few of them do. Was that an easy thing for you to start adopt doing? Like, I can easily Instagram and tweet, or take a little while to get going.
Well, where it started for me, because I was a Facebooker back in the day when I was at summer school like at Princeton.
Back in the day,
like 10 years ago, I was at summer school and I was studying, and I was really shy in high school. And I really just wanted to make friends with people. So that was the easiest way for me to, like, kind of nudge a friendship is add them on Facebook or say hi. Virtually, I was able to be less shy. And still to this day, I'm able to message people that, like, I met 2 weeks ago. That's what the person I'm dating now, George, I messaged him on Instagram.
Get at it. Well,
We didn't meet on Instagram, but I messaged him later.
Whoa.
Out for coffee. I know.
That's right there. That is very cool. Look at that. And see, look how well it worked out. And let me tell you, guys, George, handsome man. Very handsome man.
Oh, thank you.
So look at that. But many people.
I take credit for that. I iron his clothes. Make him coffee in the morning. I'm a good girlfriend.
I look at that. Yeah, very that mothering influence
He's
as well.
He's probably back there saying, "No, you don't."
But many people wouldn't think of that. Like, you meet somebody, you're like, "Oh, that's great." Well, if we ever our paths ever cross again, but,
well, they will cross again because I will slide into your DMs.
Yeah, slide. Is that the lingo? Slide into your DMs.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, all right.
That's what they say in the rap songs nowadays.
Oh, I gotcha. So doing that. So Facebook is one thing because I feel like pretty much everybody gets to handle so much on Facebook. Do you feel like of all the different avenues of social media, probably people have the best handle on Facebook?
Yeah, I think all over the world, people know what Facebook is. They have a Facebook, or they've at least seen Facebook.
And they're able to at least, to whatever level they want to use it for, they're able to kind of maximize that.
I think so.
But for Twitter and Instagram, it still seems like it varies. Some people got it, and they're able to know how to maximize it. And other people are just like, I have no idea how to increase followers. Or other people don't even know how to use this thing. What is this thing?
Yeah, it's hard to learn Instagram, and it's really hard to learn Snapchat. I rebuffed Snapchat for the longest time until I absolutely had to make a Snapchat because I couldn't figure it out.
Well, I guess for me, I keep thinking just like, if I want to just like put like funny dog ears on my face, then all right, I guess I go to Snapchat. But there's so much more to it than that.
There's a lot to it. You can put your filters where you are. It's kind of fun. Yeah, I'm still learning.
I guess the article I was reading, you were doing a shoot for Arsenic.
Yes, I am Arsenic's lead host, and they are amazing family to me.
And
love them.
What was interesting is that it's like, you know, that's a great way to increase the number of followers that follow you on other different mediums as mm-hmm. well. But I, until I was reading that, I never realized that Snapchat is a viable platform to do shows.
To do a TV-related show, you know, their Arsenic is bigger than MTV. They get almost 1 million views per snap, and that's crazy numbers for Snapchat. And they have so many fans and followers all over the world. I get messages from Spain, Korea, Africa, everywhere. Egypt the other day.
That is so. And pardon my ignorance on the Snapchat, because I just think of it as like, all right, you press the button and you get 10 seconds and then it's gone. So if you're doing more of a longer form thing, do you have more than 10 seconds to interact with somebody?
Not really. You split up. Imagine splitting up TRL back in the day. Do you guys remember TRL on MTV? Oh, it would be like splitting up TRL and into 10-second increments.
Wow. All right. It's interesting. So you're just doing quick 10-second snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't answer somebody's question, you're just going to continue it over multiple snaps until you
yes.
kind of finish it?
So I was interviewing somebody like Ray Schremmerd, and I had a question. It was a longer question. He couldn't answer it until the next snap. Then he starts in on the next snap, hey, I'll answer this. And my answer to that is really quickly.
Wow. Gosh. But is it halfway through a sentence and you're like, we're done. Hold on a second, Ray. I got to wait till we can do it again.
Either we redo the question or you have to redo the snap and then continue on to the next snap.
So you got to talk fast in that 10 seconds then. You don't have time
fast.
To waste.
Like you need brain power. You need to take your vitamins.
Yeah. Or you keep your answer short and sweet and to the
short
point.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, or else you have to keep doing it over and over again.
So it doesn't really, so always it's like either yes or no, or just like simple like one or two word responses.
Mm-hmm.
Anything longer than that, like, I've got a story, we don't have time for stories.
You can tell a story, but I have to cut it into 5 10-second snaps. So you have to be pretty succinct.
So how did this relationship with Arsenic start?
I was their second photo shoot back in the day. I guess I like saying back in the day. Does that age me?
back.
In 2013.
Oh, boy, those days. Oh, my
those
gosh.
Days.
In the olden times.
Where's my cane? And Arsenic is amazing. They build up people's social media following so well.
And so before you start working with Arsenic, in terms of what it had for you for Twitter and Instagram, did you know, I mean, certainly notice a big influx once you start doing that for your numbers on both sides?
Yeah, then? My numbers on Instagram went way up. And yeah, working for Maxim and Arsenic has really, and the Chive.
Man,
love the Chive. Don't you guys love the Chive? They're so funny.
So for this, you mentioned that you're in Poland. So these things are giving you also opportunities to also travel the world and do stuff as well.
Yeah, hosting has taken me all over the world. And, you know, I always envisioned myself as an actress, but my hobby is hosting and I love doing it.
So what has been your favorite place that you've been to so far?
I just went on vacation in Amsterdam and it was so beautiful. The job I was in Poland, the whole crew went on vacation because we had 3 days off. So we all flew to Amsterdam and stayed at the Sofitel. And we just went on the canals, did photo shoots, went shopping.
Oh.
Maybe did a little of this, but I didn't say that.
She meant straw because she was drinking from a...
I was drinking, soda from a straw.
Yes, you know, because you don't want to mess up your lipstick. So, of course, yeah. So that's exactly what was happening there. Not a bad... Well, look at that. Very... And it's always... Fun. If you get a chance to get paid to vacation in some parts, I mean, that's... Who can go right?
Company paid yes. vacation. G Fuel shout out right there.
If I must. If I have to go. All right. You make me have fun.
I'll send you the bill.
So, now, of course, you say, like, hosting is kind of like a nice hobby. Pursuing acting now. So yeah. So now the one of the latest films you're doing on is American Satan.
Yes.
And you play Raven inside there. And, yes. And of course, you've got Malcolm McDowell. You've got Denise Richards, Bill Duke, Drake Bell. A lot of great actors
Bell,
in there.
Olivia Culpo. There are so many names in this movie. It's directed and written by Ash Avildsen. And yeah, I play Raven, and my scenes are with John Bradley of Game of Thrones, which I was a fangirl on set. You better believe I was taking selfies, and he was getting annoyed.
So just one more. Just one more.
It was blurry.
I don't understand. I mean, and if you're going to tweet this out or Instagram it out, you got to have a nice photo. I mean, there's, you know, what's the point of putting something out if it's blurry? No.
Can't put it out.
No.
Gotta retake it.
Yeah. So how many to take before you're like, all right, I think I got one that's good enough.
I finally had to have somebody else take it, which was really annoying. To him, not me.
No, that's for you. You're fine. I don't know. If this takes all day, I'm fine. I'm ready to carve out that portion of the day to make sure we get this photograph right.
And the wardrobe department in this film was so good. I was wearing some pieces that were saved for Lady Gaga, some jewelry pieces, and they were insane. The spikes, and can't give too much away, but the wardrobe was so good on this movie.
Oh, man. For this, is it something that that you were approached, or you all of a sudden you see your agent reaches out to you and says, like, we've got this great film, the script came by us, we think you'd be great to audition for this?
Casting director I know, Dustin Blackburn, called me for this, and it was such a blessing because it's a really good scene. I'm really proud of that.
And for somebody, do you like being in the audition room?
Or no,
do
you, it's I'm the like worst auditioner ever. I sweat. My hands are clammy. I don't get to my lines soon enough. I'm like, just give me a second. And I just pause. They're like, does she know her lines or is she pausing to get into character? I am the worst auditioner. Most of the roles that I've had in my career have been from friends who know that I can do the part. Like in Glassjaw, I play a druggie, and they know that I wake up looking like that. And they knew I could play this part.
It's like, doesn't matter how she does in the room, we know. When you have somebody that can vouch for you, it's like, all right, it's okay, yeah. Guys, I know she's a little quiet. She sweats a lot. But don't worry. When it comes to shooting, she's going to deliver.
We gave her some deodorant. She'll be fine.
I will also, I'll jump out with you on that sweating bandwagon there. I'm a horrible sweater in those moments like
you
that.
You got a blot. You got to carry around a blot. I'll blot for you.
Oh, you blot? Well,
yes.
Mine's not so much on the forehead. Mine is just like the armpits. Just like, it's like somebody's turned on two faucets.
I'll
underneath
hose
my
you
arms.
Down.
So going into the room and kind of being a little nervous for the audition, did you walk out feeling like,
Didn't audition me. They didn't. That's why I got the role.
Oh, so that's even better. Look at that.
Yeah, casting director called me and said, do you want this role? That's so sad, right? Call me in for an audition, please.
No, but that's when you know you've made it, when people are actually just offering you roles. You don't have to come in an audition. Like, this is a role we'd like you to do.
It's been a good year. I mean, it's been a good... I've gotten into film producing this year, and it's a big goal of mine, you know. As I age in entertainment, you have to have an end goal. Do you want to be an actress all your life? There are very few, like Helen Mirren, who have carried their career past 40. There are a lot of people who have, but I think investing my time into doing something else is quite worth it.
I feel like a piece of advice that was given to me is, like, if you can produce, then you always have a job.
You always have a job. If you can write, produce, make your own projects, and find funding for them, you will always have a job.
And if you also have the hosting as well, too, things that you can also bounce back and forth between, too. So it doesn't always have to rely on acting if you decide.
I can host a show about bingo.
Oh, there you go. Look at that. All right, Kaylin.
Diaper changing.
Yeah, she's pitching shows right out here, guys. Get these. A diaper changing show? Come on. Who doesn't want that?
Are You Really 60? Will be the title of my show.
So when you go in for the table read, and you look around and you get to see, as we're talking about, like Drake Bell, Malcolm McDowell, Bill Duke, Denise Richards. Is it, are a Game of Thrones guy? I mean, you're just fanning out there. What's it like to be surrounded by all these caliber of actors?
It's crazy. Even on Glassjaw and American Satan, they have such strong casts. You have John Grise in Glassjaw. You have Mark Rolston, Jaime Camille. And he was just in a bunch of movies. It's just, I never thought I would be on set. I know I come from entertainment, and I know that I have family who are actors, working actors. But for me, I was always just so shy. I never thought that I would be on set with any of these characters.
Now, as you mentioned, somebody like, so for example, C. Thomas Howell. Is that somebody that you saw? Do you edge on this? Like, you know, I don't mind approaching him just to ask him advice or questions. Or do you feel like, he's doing something, I don't want to be a bother?
I don't want to be a bother. Just admiring from afar, you know, I know that he would give me advice, but I kind of want to do it on my own.
I can understand that completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I always feel like it's hard. Sometimes you don't want to be that, like, kind of nuisance person, even though I people will tell you that it's like, people are here to help if you just ask, but it's always hard to make that leap.
The squeaky wheel gets the lube.
Yeah.
But I'm not a squeaky wheel. I don't know. I should be squeakier. But my dad helped me get my SAG card 10 years ago.
Oh, nice.
So just been working away. You know, it's good if you have a family or friend to just help you with that one little thing that can get you going.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never been opposed to asking for help, just for that one little thing.
But it's like, because I feel like sometimes you just need that opportunity to get in the door.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, give me that opportunity. I can take advantage of it once I get in. I just need a little help just getting that for that first step, which is sometimes the hardest step for anybody.
Yeah, that really is the hardest step, knowing that you can do it or have a pathway.
So on the table read, are you one to go up and start picking people's brains, or do you kind of just sit in the back and you're like, I'm just going to watch and learn from watching?
I'm more adding people on Facebook at that point, or like following them on Instagram.
No, Malcolm, I just friended you. Could you just accept my friend request?
No, I like to pick people's brains on set. Especially, I love working in the wardrobe department. I love being around the clothes, you know, little stuff like that.
Well, I feel like that's always what, like, wardrobe and makeup. It seems to be like the common place where a lot of people come together. And
they congregate. My grandmother was a hairstylist, and she had her salon in our house. So I got to overhear all these stories all the time. Old ladies telling all their romance stories from their 20s. Got a lot of relationship advice off of them growing up.
Stuff that you still use today.
I do still use some of the wisdom I learned.
Oh, that's
all
great.
Those old ladies getting the same haircut.
I had a friend of our family also at one point had a little mini salon inside her house as well. And it was just interesting to go in. It's like, this is a house, but it's also a salon. It was
a salon, a makeup room. Yeah. My grandmother would like dress people. I have this top you would love. And she would just give them clothes. So I guess that's where I get it from. But on set, definitely the makeup area and the wardrobe area, people are picking each other's brains about life in Hollywood.
Yeah, and so and definitely given your background, a place that you feel most comfortable hanging out in. Like, I'm the makeup area, the salon, the hair and makeup, I can hang out here all day.
That's usually where most of the chairs are, and I'm lazy, so I like to sit down.
So now, where did you film American Satan?
In Los Angeles.
Oh, nice.
Glassjaw as well. Our last day on Glassjaw is in Lancaster.
Okay.
And they have filmed all over L.A., City of Angels Boxing, and this little place is all over Los Angeles, which is great. A lot of shows are coming back to Los Angeles. They've been in Toronto. They've been in Atlanta for a long time, but shows are coming back.
So you finish up with American Satan, and then did you have you're doing hosting, other stuff like that. And then when did the people from Glass Jaw approach you to get involved?
My girlfriend Karina and her boyfriend Lee wrote the movie. And I called them. I said, how is this movie going? I want to make a little investment. And they gave me an associate producer credit and said, this role is for you. And I play the lead character's mom, who leaves him at foster care and basically catapults him into this life of boxing and wanting to be a champion boxer.
Hence Glass Jaw.
Glass Jaw. It's a boxing movie.
There you go. Yes.
Boxing is my favorite sport. And I've worked in the boxing industry for the past couple years for Top Rank, which is Manny Pacquiao's company that he fights for. I was a ringo for them, and then I did some commentary of my own just as a host. I just love the sport.
So were you satisfied with the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight? Did you feel like it came too late in their careers to really be a satisfying fight?
Yeah, too late in their careers, I think, if they would have done it sooner. But it's really hard to negotiate something like that. And I think that they were both at a place, especially Pacquiao, where he didn't necessarily need the money, but he wants to support his family. So I think taking that, you know, I think a lot of big fights are rigged, but.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a story that you always hear. I mean, but how much of it is like, well, I guess I could see back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe, but you would think today, maybe not, but I could be totally like, Frank, you're dumb. It's still being rigged. We just don't know. They're much more sophisticated about how they rig it.
It's a little bit more sophisticated. It's more based on a feeling. I think Mayweather owning his own promotions company really opens up a lot of doors for him and. Gets him a lot of money. I want to be in his position, making all of his own money. Because when you're a boxer, you have to split up your money. You have a manager, you have PR, you have your promotions company, you have your family. He's raking it in.
Yeah, I mean, you think people like Mike Tyson, who just lost everything.
Yeah, lost everything.
So now, speaking of Mayweather, would you want to see, because it's always been talked about, like the Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight?
I would watch that fight. Yes. I love Conor McGregor. He is a badass. He is a trailblazer.
Do you think he could take Mayweather?
It's difficult to say whether MMA fighters can go fight as boxers. It's really hard. I think he could take him, though.
Really? Man, because I feel like Mayweather would just keep his distance.
Yeah, he would be on defense the whole time, but I think Conor would not care. He would go in on that.
I'll take some blows as long as I can get you. Because if I get up close and I can get you, then it's game over.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see me? Because I feel like Conor McGregor's like, yep, sign me up. When is it?
Show I think Conor would forget and give him a roundhouse kick. Just kick him in the head. Fight's over. I think he would just forget that he's not in the ring.
But it would be cool to see. Just to see Mayweather go down once? Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I would love that. Just
what
for a second.
What
Don't
do you think
hurt.
The odds are that Mayweather would say yes to this?
Never in a million years, except for $200 million.
If the money is there, he'll say yes.
If the money is there and he thinks it's the right decision for his career, I don't know. Could happen.
I mean, because I feel like that he's so invested in like keeping his undefeated record.
Yeah, he's really invested. It might be a no for him. I don't know. He loves to keep the drama going, even with, who's the female MMA fighter who is UFC Ronda Rousey. Okay.
They were
talking a Mayweather Rousey fight.
That I mean, as talented as she is, I just don't.
It'll never happen. Yeah. But he just likes to keep the drama going, the conversation going.
So, what led you to love in boxing? Was that something that you grew up watching? Was your family kind of more boxing fans?
No, I know that my grandfather was a boxer when he was young in Pittsburgh, near Pittsburgh, and. He would do bare knuckle boxing, and he would just street fight.
What?
And
man,
he
that's
was
like
a badass.
Street fighting and bare knuckle boxing—that is crazy.
And I overheard him talking to his friends about it when I was a very little girl, so it always stuck in my mind. But not until he passed away in 2009 did I sort of I saw a fight at a bar or something, and I really got into it.
Whew, man, that's
because I felt connected to him.
Yeah,
you know, I
absolutely,
you know. When somebody passes away, you want to connect with the things that they loved. It makes you feel like you're still with them.
So as street fighting and bare knuckle boxing, I mean, what kind of, I mean, that's basically just very localized. There's no chance to really kind of go and.
Well, actually, DirecTV started bare knuckle boxing, but they, and I worked for them for a period of time, they still were mandated to have small, light gloves. So it wasn't essentially bare knuckle boxing, like you would see at Fight Club. They couldn't get that off the ground, but they did have that momentarily.
So as somebody that loves boxing, do you still get into like MMA, or if you're like, eh?
I'm a little into MMA. Yeah. I know a thing or two. I love boxing so much more. I think it's more masculine, but a lot of MMA fighters are so, you know, they're such great fighters. It's just the rolling around on the floor just still gets me.
And I feel like, do you feel like this, that boxing is not as prominent? It's kind of, the light's kind of dwindled on that.
Boxing is dying. It's a dying sport, and I'm not quite sure. Well, the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight had such an influence whether boxing was going to survive, and seeing that fight with no real blows, people are used to seeing UFC fights where people are bloody. They feel like they're watching a real heart-to-heart fight, and in boxing, you can't see those blows unless you see a knockout, and knockouts are, you know, not that bloody.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes they are.
Not everything is like what you see like in the Rocky films, where you know, people are just like bloody and their eyes are swollen and stuff, and they still keep going.
People want to see that, though. But I kind of like seeing it at UFC. You know, they fight their hearts out.
When they were, I actually moved out here just as they were filming that Contender, that Mark Burnett boxing series, mm-hmm. and one of the seasons when they did the finale over at the Staples Center, and went to go and watch that, and just realizing, like, boy, it's one thing to take a boxing match on the Contender and kind of shape it down and make it every moment of it seem exciting, but then when you're watching the whole long form of it, you're like, man, there's a lot of dancing around. They're not really coming in touch. Yeah.
Yep. It was like that on the set of Southpaw, because I was the ring girl in Southpaw, and I was watching the fights for days and days, and it took 3 weeks to film two fights, and that was definitely an experience to see the fake fights.
Yeah, what is it like being on set, like for the Glassjaw or Southpaw, and you're seeing, you know, filmed boxing matches? Is it a lot more choreographed?
It's choreographed, and sometimes the fighters or the actors do get hit. They accidentally hit the other actor, and it really jolts them because they're used to doing these choreographed moves that are prepared for set. So that was interesting to see. A lot of sweat.
Is a lot of just like spraying them down? Like, let's put some sweat on you guys. Make sure you're all glistening.
The water sweat. Yeah, the makeup department comes over with a little spray bottle. But, you know, the lights, they get hot.
Yeah.
You really start to sweat.
Now, is it as cool to watch just even in a choreographed form, or is like,
it is.
Yeah.
Because you still have to be in great shape, and you still have to know how to box. It's not like you can learn the dance moves of a fight and look like a fighter. You have to actually have trained to be a fighter to make it look real.
I thought, did you see Creed?
Yes.
I thought like that was
a great movie.
Yes, I loved it. And I just thought different ways of filming boxing that I hadn't seen before. Just like seeing like from like a very first person perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really cool, like the single takes for
things.
It was
unique. And that's why it was so acclaimed, because it's a new take on it. Boxing movies are hard to film. It's difficult to do a good boxing movie. So I think Glassjaw is the next big thing. It's going to be good.
So you have one more day of filming, and then is the idea, do they already have a deal set for release, or are they going to go to festivals?
They have all of that worked out. I don't think they're going the festival route, but they might. Let's see what happens. You know, Steve Perry, the producer on Glassjaw, worked on True Romance. That was his baby. And Jeff Celentano directed Breaking Point. So they have a really good crew, some really good people. So I definitely think they're going to get it in the theaters.
And what was it like for you as somebody that said, like, you know, you want to be able to expand what you're doing and have other avenues for your career, getting in for an associate producer role for that? What was it like, kind of, is this your first time getting a producer credit?
It's my second producer's role. I did an all social media starring horror movie called Rideshare about a killer Uber driver. And we just wrapped that as well. And I always, you know, I always gear towards influencers. I want to bring them into Hollywood. And most influencers want to be professional actors. So it's, you know, good to give them opportunities and see how they do.
And so what was it like being on the other side of it, being more of a producer? Was it like being on that side?
It's so awesome showing up to set and not combing my hair. I don't have to be under lights. I don't have to be on camera, but I like facilitating things. I like finding the right actors, and I like being on set. Do you need coffee?
Letting that mom side of you come out.
Mom side, yes.
There you go.
I guess that's what it is, huh? Darn it.
So now doing this for Glassjaw, how much did you get to coming with 30 people that are so well established behind it or already and coming in? Did you get a lot of chance to put your kind of fingerprint on it, or you're more like, I'm just going to be kind of...
I was really just behind it all, watching the magic happen. And their DP, Jeffrey Kimball, is a Hollywood legend. This is one of his very last films. And just watching him show up, and he's so amazing. He's so detailed, and he notices everything, what's going on camera. And you think, because he's, you know, so old that he's not going to pick up... He picks up on every single detail. It's so interesting to watch.
That's got to be so interesting to watch somebody with that level of talent. Just seeing how they work the camera, work the set to kind of sculpt everything and make a scene.
It's his art. It's his viewpoint. So it's really magical to see.
Now, for somebody like, is he still quick and efficient in getting scenes set up? Or is it still like, it takes a while? If you're going to make something look this great, it still takes a lot of time.
It takes time. It does take time, and he's delegating. You know, DPs delegate, and they have everybody working for them. And, you know, you can get – it depends on your crew and how crafty they are to get stuff done quickly.
But I imagine when you get to work with somebody of his caliber, people are on their A game. Nobody wants to be the guy that's getting called out.
I was on my A game. He dropped his hat. I ran over to pick up that hat.
So now Glassjaw's wrapping up tomorrow, the last day of filming. How do you feel? Are you going to be sad that it's over, or are you like, oh, no, I'm ready to move on to something else?
Oh, I'm so happy for Karina, my friend, just getting her movie done. I think wrapping up to something else. Need that next journey to go on.
Yeah.
You never know when your last project is going to be.
Caitlin, it's going to be a long time for you. No worries. You've got a lot of great stuff happening. So,
all right, I know you're taking a little time off. I'll compose you off when you're sweating. That'll be my next step.
Yes. You mentioned like social influencers. They want to be more actors. I don't think they want to be more hosts. Is that not the case?
I do know a lot of girls who are known for their social media presence as a model, and they want to start talking on camera. That's really your next step as a model. You get kind of tired of just showing emotion on photo. You want to start speaking. If you can speak. A lot of models can't speak, and that's what's something they're working on. But if you can speak, that's your next go-to thing. I want to move into acting or hosting. I very much enjoy hosting.
So for you, being the social media guru that you are, what is one thing that you, when you go through somebody else's Instagram, something like that, you're like, that's a big mono. What is like one common mistake that so many people make that you're like, oh man, stop doing this if you want to get more followers?
Having blurry photos. A lot of people will take a selfie or a photo, of a mountain, but it won't have a high resolution. So people can't really see what you're looking at. You can't share the beauty unless you have a high res photo. I guess that's the biggest no-no.
Okay.
Or posting too many times a day.
How many times a day should you post?
On Instagram, maybe two or three.
Okay.
Usually just one.
One is enough, but if you can do two or three, that's great.
You can do your story. You have Instagram story now, so you can snap your day and be totally fine with just one Instagram post. But people who send 10 out at one time, I'm just scrolling through the same version of the same photo, it's a little annoying. That's why you lose followers.
So as somebody that's very proficient on Snapchat and does a lot of work with them, do you feel like this Instagram story is competing with Snapchat, or is like... Snapchat is, or they're too far ahead. It's not going to go away.
I think Snapchat is not going to go away, knock on wood, because, you know, that's bread and butter for me. I work on Snapchat with Arsenic, but I think the Instagram story has definitely stolen some of Snapchat's fire. But you can't do, on Instagram story, you can't do the filters. So I can't be a dog. I have to be a dog on Snapchat. Or a tiger. Or a princess.
There you go. I feel like that. You know, Snapchat has kind of cornered that.
You guys remember the ninja with the sword? I can't be drowning. You know the drowning
that's
filter.
True, yeah. So the photos matter more than like the post that you put about the whatever you're posting. Does that your story that you're writing about a picture? Does that not matter so much? It's more about the photo itself.
There's all sorts of changes going on with Instagram because they're owned by Facebook, and the Facebook algorithm has changed the way Instagram is molded, and right now not tagging people in your Instagram post sends it through the algorithm faster. You get more likes if you're not promoting products and sponsored products.
Oh, interesting.
I have found.
So if you just, if you're like, hey, I ate at the pie hole. If you don't like, if you don't tag them, but you just type it in, that's going to get a better spread than if you were to kind of tag them.
Yes, but that also works on Facebook if you're not tagging, so that the Facebook algorithm sees that you're trying to sell something, because it's geared towards you paying for sponsored posts, because Facebook wants you to pay for ad sponsors.
I don't want to brag. You know, I know Caitlin's got over 400,000 people on Instagram. I bragged to her that I have 240. She's my 240th one.
I am your 240th. Yes.
But my biggest claim to fame was I got a free pie from the pie. Well, that was it. I was like, wow, I've come and I've made
awesome.
It. Yeah, that's so awesome. Woo!
No, my friend the other day got a free t-shirt at a store that he really loves, and he was so excited about it. Social media does get you a lot of free stuff, and it's awesome.
So what's next up for you? Other than taking a few days off, heading to Malibu, exploring the beach with your dog, what's up next for you?
I have no idea. I have zero idea.
Do you feel good about that? Or do you get a little nervous when you have no idea what's going to be coming up?
I know that I'm going to be working on post-production for Rideshare, which is the killer Uber driver movie. And I'm excited about that, seeing where it goes and where it's going to end up. And maybe just tackling some more film producer roles.
And some more hosting gigs.
And some more hosting gigs. I will be hosting for Maxim until they fire me.
Do you already have your next Maxim assignment or no?
Would be Indy 500. The Indy 500 and then the Maxim Hot 100 party.
Oh, Indy 500. I've been there like 5 or 6 times. What? Just for people watching alone, it is an awesome place to go.
It's loud.
Yes.
It's so loud. You might lose your hearing.
It's loud and it's crazy. And the people there, they just like the people that get there like a week ahead of time and they just park in that one lot where they have like the mobile showers that drive
mobile
in.
Mobile showers. They have a Walmart that pulls up, like a mobile Walmart. And you go and get your stuff for the evening. They're all sitting in their campers drinking and having a good time. It's one of the best things that I've ever been to.
It is.
They bike at night. They bike all over the track. With their light up bikes.
Get out of town. They do that too?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I've never known. No, I always wonder what these people do when they've got, you know, a whole week to kill in Indy and the race isn't until, you know, Saturday. You're like, what are you doing until then? All
right. Pre-game.
Yeah, lots of pre-gaming going on. Yeah. If you want to see, you know, just the craziest people around that have driven from all parts of the country to come out there and hang out for a week.
So awesome.
Just the mobile showers alone. That was just,
but I still have to say Maxim Hot 100 Party is a little bit better.
All right. And is that, where's that located?
They switched from L.A. to New York, and this year's was in Los Angeles, and it was packed with celebs and hot girls and all these great dresses. Pretty girls, can't beat it.
No, you can't beat it. No, not at all. That's fantastic. Do you feel sad that you're not giving advice anymore for them, or you're fine? Like, I'm just hosting. That's great.
They probably think my advice isn't good.
What? Get out of here. You told people not to drive a red Corvette.
I love giving advice if they want to rehire me for Helpful Hottie, but I love hosting for them. It's definitely a dream come true.
That's so cool. Now, Caitlin, if they want to keep up to date with everything that you're doing, where's the best place of many places they can find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at Caitlin_O'Connor, 2 underscores, because there's that other Caitlin O'Connor stealing my shine.
We don't want that. No. Double underscore that.
2 underscores.
Yes. On Twitter?
1 underscore on Twitter. Just search for Caitlin O'Connor. If you want to find me, you'll find me.
You don't want to double underscore it on Twitter just to keep it consistent?
No.
Nope. All right. I got it.
It's taken.
Oh, it is? Oh. The double underscore?
The double underscore is taken on Twitter.
Oh, wow. Let's find out who that person is. Double underscore Caitlin O'Connor. We need that handle. So
I'll buy your account.
We're coming for you. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram with a sweet 240 followers now, thanks to Caitlin, at Happy Go Jackie. Until next time, folks, we'll see you back here for another edition of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, right here on AfterBuzz TV. Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Let's get married.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.